Yes, it's still August, and announcing the next season of Horrifying Classics is a little like doing Christmas in July, but there are a lot of fans of spooky literature out there, so I would be remiss not to point out that this year's Horrifying Classics is all about Stephen King. I've read six of his books on your behalf, and week by week I'll be getting into classic categories like film adaptations and character for your listening pleasure, of course. And on October 1st, our brand new, all-encompassing website will be launched, where you can learn about things like the future of DH&I, sign up for our monthly mailing list, and take part in the future of literature worldwide. I can't wait to see you then. F. Scott and Zelda Fitzgerald. Enough said. Or is it? Hello and welcome back to Diddy and Hawthorne in the In-Between. I'm your host, Mackenzie Gentz, and you're listening to my podcast about the relevancy of literature in the 21st century. Now bookmark that book and let's begin. I've just finished reading, or rather listening to, the audiobook for one of the most elusive Fitzgerald books on the market. It's called Save Me the Waltz and was the first and only book to have been written exclusively by Zelda Fitzgerald. I'll get to that tricky word that I just used, exclusively, in a moment. In many ways, this episode is my love letter to Save Me the Waltz, because while it checks all of the boxes for a book written by one of the Fitzgeralds, there are a number of things that shocked me about it, things that made me reconsider just why in the world I expect that practically no one listening right now has ever heard of it before, but rather has heard of books like, say, Tender is the Night, F. Scott's version of Save Me the Waltz, or The Great Gatsby. If you've been a long-time listener of the show, you've heard the story I'm about to tell three times over the past year that I've been publishing. How do I know I've told it three times? Well, I went back and counted. But I've told it three times, and I'm about to tell it a fourth, because to me, it's that important and that worth it to repeat again and again. F. Scott Fitzgerald. It's the name that you would most reliably recognize in association with The Great Gatsby, a novel that stands solidly in the line of the greatest American novels of all time, and a novel that's often talked about from the perspective of post-war disillusionment in 1920s-era America. Some pertinent themes in the novel include the lost generation after the First World War, new versus old money in America, and fame during Fitzgerald's life. Indeed, Fitzgerald himself, as I see it, was his favorite thing to write about. We've talked about these things extensively before, and in fact, we've done two episodes thus far, both with guests, on The Great Gatsby, both of which I've linked in the description if you haven't listened to them already. The other time I've told this story, by the way, if you've been listening and are curious, is not from the episode you'd expect, and it's also linked in the description to quell that very curiosity. So we know F. Scott as the author of The Great Gatsby, but if we were alive in 1925, the year that the book was first published, Fitzgerald to us would be a totally different story. We would most likely know him from the tabloids, in which he and his wife Zelda were a permanent fixture of scandal and what it meant to be newly rich and famous, or, if not from there, from his debut novel, This Side of Paradise, which was published in 1920. The story goes that Fitzgerald always knew that The Great Gatsby was going to be his masterpiece, and while Scribner's did eventually publish it in the April of 1925, after what was essentially a five-year hiatus of Fitzgerald as a novelist, it was a very small print run that didn't sell very well at all. The Great Gatsby, from the very beginning, was a polarizing text that overall got wonderful early critical acclaim, but failed to assuage the desires of the very audience that Fitzgerald was immortalizing within the pages of this novel. Later editions of the print were left in stacks of boxes at the very backs of bookstores, or in other words, the book was ultimately dreadfully overprinted for the size of its audience. And the extra copies ended up being shipped to American soldiers overseas who were fighting in World War II. It was only after the soldiers came back from the war that the book gained some traction, and I imagine the situation went somewhat and facetiously like this. Soldier 1. Hey, what did you think of that one Fitzgerald book? Civilian 1. Ah, the one that came out 5 years ago? Not bad, but you haven't seen what he and his wife Zelda have been up to lately, have you? I mean, that woman has no shame. Civilian 2. Fitz, who, what's it? Soldier One. No, no, I'm talking about The Great Gatsby. Me and the boys read it during the war. I'd recommend it, actually. That Fitzgerald character has some interesting things to say about the way things are going here. And thereafter, the book had two more audience members, and things went on like that until it reached, really, the international standing that it has today. Another thing that's important is that I personally believe that F. Scott Fitzgerald was the sole author of The Great Gatsby, and what I'm insinuating really here is that there is substantial evidence that his other books took, on occasion, large chunks of materials from the writings of Zelda Fitzgerald, such as with his first book, This Side of Paradise, and as well with Tender is the Night. Another reason why this case of plagiarism matters to me is because Fitzgerald, while large looming in the literary sphere, only completed 5 novels of fiction, and this is not including his long list of short story collections, but what made him famous was his fiction, or rather his fiction combined with fiction that was derived from Zelda's fiction. I'm not making the argument that Zelda was this genius behind F. Scott, or that F. Scott was the genius behind either the literary success or the production failure of Save Me the Waltz, but I am making the argument that both F. Scott and Zelda contributed significantly to their dual body of work. Further, I'm making the argument that when talking about the Fitzgeralds, one must truly talk about the Fitzgeralds together, as in a double biography. One's work, in my opinion, cannot exist without the others. The perfect example to illustrate what I'm saying is Zelda's novel, of course, Save Me the Waltz, and F. Scott's subsequent rewrite of the same events, published under the title of Tender is the Night. Save Me the Waltz was actually written within 2 months during Zelda's stay at a sanatorium at Johns Hopkins Hospital. She sent it initially to Maxwell Perkins, F. Scott's editor at Scribner's, without F. Scott's knowing, and Perkins was reportedly interested enough in the first draft that he began to look into publishing it alone. Interestingly, however, the rest of the story, as archivists have pieced it together, has come exclusively from F. Scott's correspondence with Perkins and various other people involved with editing and publishing, meaning that he intervened with the book Save Me the Waltz very early on in the publishing process. At first, Zelda wanted Perkins to publish as was, with no edits whatsoever. After several months, however, F. Scott coaxed her into changing key elements of the plot, including removing or heavily editing key scenes that he felt were too close to the reality of their life and marriage. Save Me the Waltz was published in 1932, and F. Scott's novel, Tender is the Night, was published 2 years later in 1934. I also want to mention that much of the Fitzgerald's work is autobiographical. They're written as though it were fiction. The main character of Save Me the Waltz was originally called Amory Blaine, the name of the heroine from This Side of Paradise, and, as F. Scott reported himself, a literary doppelganger of sorts. The main character's name in the current edition of the book is David Knight, however, as F. Scott, during the many months of his oversight on the novel, pushed Zelda to change it. Many people are obsessed with the Fitzgeralds because of the glamour that's associated with them, with the Lost Generation's circle of artists that they were a part of in Paris, and of course, with the theme of the newly rich in America. But I'm obsessed with them because of their seemingly symbiotic relationship with regards to literature, with the components of the 6 novels between them that they seem to share, the components that, in other words, are indistinguishable when it comes down to deciphering whether it came from one or from the other. If you enjoyed the discussion and would like to hear more from me, there is an episode of DH&I for everyone, so I'd recommend checking out our back catalog of episodes. 2019 is the year of Didion, so if you'd like to follow along in my quest to read Joan Didion's collective works or learn more about the movement to bring lit back to people, everything can be found at didionandhawthorne.blueberry.net, and remember that blueberry is spelled B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. Now you can also follow the show on Twitter with @DidionIn, 2 N's total. I'll be posting about new lit releases, reading lists, and of course the new projects and episodes relating to DH&I. Still there? One more thing then. Remember that leaving a comment or review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or any other Guilty Pleasure podcast platform helps leverage the show so that other literature enthusiasts can find the community. In other words, it helps a ton. Auf Wiederhören!